Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Welcome to part two of our special national broadcast.
Water is life. Protect the wildlife, say indigenous activists leading thousands in protest of Enbridge's tar sands Line 3 pipeline in northern Minnesota. The Line 3 pipeline project in Minnesota, if completed, will move up to 915,000 barrels of tar sands oil per day from Alberta, Canada to Superior, Wisconsin. Tar sands oil is one of the dirtiest energy sources on the planet. The 337-mile stretch of pipeline now being built in Minnesota would cross indigenous Anishinaabe treaty lands, threatening their sacred wild rice crop, which requires clean water to grow. I'm joined now, right from the front lines, by Simone Sinagles with the Indigenous Environmental Network and an Anishinaabe from the Red Lake Nation of Ojibwe in northern Minnesota, and Angel Stevens, an Anishinaabe wild rice harvester and a member of the anti-pipeline Menominee camp, and Silas Nealon, one of the youngest indigenous water protector warriors. We'll also hear later on from indigenous activist Winona LaDuke as she is about to address the Stop Enbridge Water Protectors. How have they managed to, against certainly people like yourself, righteous oppositionists, how have they managed to impose themselves and this horrifying project, Big Money Speak, but what is actually politically giving them the license to be these terrifying intruders? Who's permitting it? Who do we have to look at aside from the Enbridge company?
That's what's being argued between the state of Minnesota, the tribes, and the federal government right now with that court case going on. The Minnesota DNR tried to intervene and try to say that the tribes did not have jurisdiction by keeping that court case within the tribal court. They wanted it to be in state court to go on their side. But a federal judge threw that claim out and said, no, it's going to stay in tribal court. The problems that we have here, the only treaty that was really recognized in Minnesota was the 1854 treaty with the Mille Lacs Band. And that's what our precedent is for our treaty laws. We had 11 tribes in Minnesota. Six of them belong to the Minnesota Chippewa tribe. The tribes that they consulted with only were about two of them out of those six. So two out of 11 of those tribes were the ones that they consulted with. But two of those tribes belong to an overall tribe in Minnesota.
Has there been any legal action? I know that at one point Enbridge pierced a groundwater aquifer in Clearwater County during the construction of the Line 3 oil pipeline, which caused an estimated release of more than 24 million gallons of groundwater from the aquifer, posing the risk to all kinds of rare wetlands. Is there a litigation that is going on for these terrible, irreparable kind of damages that Enbridge is causing?
I'm actually right on that river right now with the same frack outs again. That answers your question. It doesn't stop them. If they keep going, they do not care.
Yep, I think that's the DNR suing Enbridge for that aquifer piercing that you're referencing. I think it's odd, right? Like, so on one hand, the DNR is being sued by the tribes. I do think just recently, though, the DNR is the one that is suing Enbridge for the aquifer piercing that you're mentioning. The other entity that people should be aware of that have a say in this and have remained silent is U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, because they issued the water crossing permit that the company needed in order to proceed in November of 2020. We've had them out visiting the highest level, visiting the very spots where we sit, where we witness frack out, and they have
also
done
witnessed
nothing.
The frack out.
Yeah, they witnessed
they
the frack
also
out. They saw it with their own eyes. We walked out there with high-ranking members of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and showed them the frack out. The number of frack outs was underreported by the company and by the other agencies that are supposed to be protecting our our environment. It's nightmarish because we think that government is there to protect us and to keep companies at bay, and it's not true. And to witness it firsthand on the ground in your own homeland, it just drives it home so much that corporations with lots of money can run over the tribal citizens, certainly.
Nevertheless, opponents have been unrelenting in their opposition. I also remember a number of young people from up here, who the Shoshone folks who had gone down to Minnesota, who were in protest. La luta continua, the struggle does continue against the Enbridge company and the license for them to put in this polluting, miserable pipeline 3. Who's been involved in the struggle, and how is it continuing to unfold? Angel, why don't you start us off?
There's actually been a lot of people that we've met. We've been to different places along the Line 3. We've met Sasha Beaulieu at Red Lake Treaty Camp, Nancy Beaulieu at Firelight, Tayshia Martineau. I went up to Palisades, and I met Shanae Madison, Tanya Abed. First time I met Shanae was during an event during the winter time. She was organizing up there, and her daughter had made everybody who had gathered there a water protector blanket. There's like so many people out there that are on this front line that are fighting. There's natives, there's non-natives, there's tribal members. We have descendants. A lot of people that I've met out here surprised me. People that have read my actual White Earth Constitution, our MCT Constitution is not small. If anybody tells me that they flip through it, impresses me, because not a lot of people go through those treaties, because as I've grown up, I've come to terms that Native people are disregarded, seen as people that should have assimilated long time ago, should have learned to live the way that was forced upon them. But we did it. We're resilient. We rise above things. My grandma was orphaned at a boarding school. That's how she was raised, but she made it home. And that's the people that you're going to meet out there. This is home to them. This is why they're fighting out there. Tribes are going to start to get recognized, is that more and more of us are going to be standing up. There's not a lot of Native in politics. That's one of our problems. We look at it as we don't want to deal with that stuff. But I realize in this fight on the front lines that we do need voices out there. We need people to step up and be like, yeah, you know, I'm going to go mingle with these politicians so I can tell them about our history. Educate them in some way.
What has been happening to people who have been on the front lines fighting Pipeline 3?
I see the good. I see the bad. I've been called names. You know, I've been flicked off. I've been told a lot of hurtful things. Oh, I know both sides are getting the brunt ends of both. I've met a lot of new people out here, a lot of people that have changed my mind, my perception of society outside of the reservation. I had a non-Native woman, not even from Minnesota, and she told me that she read my White Earth Constitution.
Mm.
After that, I respected her. Not a lot of people would do that. And like, it's a big, thick book. Like, I'm talking about 3 inches, 4 inches thick. You know what I mean? When I was walking with the treaty people, you know, we would have people honking and swearing at us and flicking us off. You want to know who the people I remember most? There's a lady and a man that came, and they set up a table right where we were predicted to walk. And they set up water for us, sweat cloths, hand sanitizers. They had face masks. They had little food that we can grab and go. So we didn't have to stop meeting people like that, especially after you're walking and you're just hearing all these people swearing at you and flicking you off. Then you meet those people, right? When you're just ready to give up, with those people that like were actually took the time and stopped and said, hey, you know, I respect what you guys are doing. You know, I hear you applauding you guys. Keep doing what you're doing.
Simone, you tell us some of the things that Enbridge has been doing as a company, their policing apparatus, the police, what has happened, the tactics and really terroristic behavior they have employed against protesters.
In the face of incredibly dehumanizing apparatus, Enbridge, they represent continuation of colonization of my homeland. There's always been this push to displace us, to take what we have, to kill us. And in the face of all that, we still find humanity. We still find our way home, find our strength. We still struggle to speak our language, eat our traditional foods, and fulfill our responsibilities to our homeland. You know, as much as we need the land needs us. So I just really want to acknowledge that and thank you for putting that so beautifully. It kind of makes me choked up because it's just so real. The way she described it really brings home what it is like to be out there. And she's out there far more than I am. But as far as criminal behavior and policy and actions of Enbridge, it's a company that will stop at nothing to make profit. And that's unfortunate that we're in a place where a company is willing to destroy water, which is life, and destroy everything, destroy communities just to make profit. And so our community has been feeling some of the effect. There's a few different ways. The company put a large amount of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, into escrow funds that the police can draw from, pay themselves for putting down the free speech rights of the people that they're sworn to protect and serve. I saw a list recently of the county where I live about some of the purchases that they made with Enbridge money. Our sheriff's department purchased batons, shields, chemical irritants, and all of that was paid for by Enbridge. They did training, staff time, new equipment. All of that was paid for by the company. So I don't see how law enforcement could ever pretend to us that they are fair when they're shooting us with rubber bullets, tackling us, tying us with zip ties, brutalizing us, that they are doing it because they're trying to uphold the law. No, they're doing it because they've been paid to do so. And the other thing,
And what kind of arrests are we talking about? And in the process of arresting people, how have people been injured? Because the reports are significant as to real aggressive brutality and mass arrests.
Yeah. So I'll just say this really quick. Is one of the things is like, for one, I myself was arrested, and it was 2 below, really, really cold last December, and I was arrested with a group of about 20 other people, and 2 law enforcement, I did not resist. I was just trying to protect the river. I was just standing in the way of the machines along with the other people. 2, you know, law enforcement men who were bigger than me and who were trained, you know, grabbed me and pushed me to the ground and put their hand on the back of my head and pushed me down and then zip tied my hands behind my back. And then I was made to stand outside with all of us for, you know, 2 hours in the freezing cold without really much weight. My hands behind my back zip tied for that long. So there's that. But that was at the beginning. And I think they've only gotten more brutal. People have been shot with rubber bullets. And what it is when people are in resistance, they may be doing ceremony. They may be singing songs, just putting their body in the way of machinery. They may be trying to exercise treaty rights, but never has it been violent. I think there's been verbal, people yell back and forth. Let's face it, rage in the face of injustice is completely reasonable. But I don't know if any law enforcement have ever been harmed by any of us. But for the most part, those 900 people who have been arrested have been acting out of love for our water and for our people.
And what kind of charges are they facing?
Everything from misdemeanors, gross misdemeanors, to felonies. So trespassing, the biggest one, I think, refusing to leave when ordered.
And what kind of prison terms do they potentially face? Because they're really not insignificant. When we say misdemeanors and stuff, people think of that as really de minimis. That's not the case there.
They're throwing everything they have at us. And so the justice system is being unjust to us, just quashing our free speech rights and our rights to engage in our so-called democracy. Bail for a misdemeanor have been like $3,000 or more. People have been held in jail 3-4 days. The prison terms they're threatening people with are not, they give you a slap on the wrist. The people who are risking arrest are risking significant jail time, legal fees, and disruption to their lives, and yet they're still out there.
So Angel Silas continues to be described as one of the youngest protesters, 13 years old. I wonder if we might talk to Silas for a moment. Is he available?
Silas!
There you are.
Hi, Silas.
Yes.
Hey. Hi. Tell us about your own experience. Why are you protesting the pipeline?
Oh, well, my name is Silas Nealon. I am resisting this pipeline, standing up against it because for my future generations, my children and my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, for them to have clean water. As Anishinaabe, we do rely on the Mississippi River for some of our drinking water, and this pipeline is by the Mississippi River, so if this does spill, it will contaminate it.
As a young indigenous man, do you think that the struggle against the pipeline has everything to do with the self-determination, the feeling and the control of your people to exist and to, with their traditions?
Yes, this pipeline is not too far from our rice and lakes, and I heard my mom, for some of it, as Anishinaabe, is wild rice is always in our food pantry. Every time I go to like a family cookout with my family, something, there's always wild rice there. And it's like so crazy that this pipeline is going through. The White Earth did not give consent. Red Lake didn't give consent.
Are you scared when you face down these armed police, these armed guards and so on?
It gets a little fear, and I can agree. But when that does happen, I just remember I am here for my children. I am here for my great-grandchildren, and I cannot let Enbridge win this fight.
Are you going to continue to, and are other young people your age, are you also encouraging, and are they listening, other young people, to join the resistance?
I am encouraging. You know, come out. You don't have to be, like, directly at a dangerous protest. Just come to a camp. These camps are so welcoming. It's overwhelming. I just love it. I've been to almost every camp, including Red Lake Treaty Camp, Camp Menominee Wendug, Camp Namewug. We are the future generation, and we should stand up against this pipeline as it is affecting indigenous people in northern Minnesota.
So I want you to begin, and then Angel, and then Simone, to tell us what the message is to people like myself and others listening. What would you like us to do to support this heroic and heroic struggle against the Line 3 pipeline that Enbridge is intent on installing and absolutely destroying the environment, really destroying the integrity, or trying to, and legacy of indigenous people who are on sovereign land?
Do whatever you can, you know, like what Tayshia Bardo said, everywhere can be the front line. Can make for us in your own community. We would be super thankful for that since we are in a pandemic. But I do suggest you come over here, but I do get we're in a pandemic, so you could do something at your own home. You can share stuff on social media. Just get the voice out there.
Is there a particular chant that folks use out there that you might rally us behind?
What do you do when your land is under attack? Stand up, fight back. What do you do when your people are under attack? Stand up, fight back. What do you do when your water is under attack? Stand up, fight back.
Perfect. Now maybe we can hear from Angel again, and she can give us as well the final message. But I have to say, my goodness, does she have a magnificent warrior son.
Yes, here.
Angel got me over here crying.
I think I'm in love with your son. I was already in love with you and Simone, but I'm certainly in love with Silas now.
Yeah, he has that effect on people.
He inherited his mom's spirit and his people's sensitivity. So tell us, what's the final message, whether it's about what we need to do or what you folks are going to do, and the preservation of the land, the environment, the planet, but really the respect for the integrity and tradition of indigenous people? All of that's at stake here. What should we do?
There's a lot that anyone can do. Just like Silas was saying, by keep your voices heard. I was just thinking about, I did mention Namewug, where Tara Huska is, and she was just recently shot by rubber bullets, and just seeing, you know, those bruises on all over her body, you know, and it's like things like that. Like, it's people like Tara that keep us fighting. We want people to, like, however you can, just say no to this pipeline. Like, get your voices up. Just say no. Like, don't be afraid to, like, come out here and stand up. Just like Silas said, right next to us. Not everybody is arrested out here on the front lines. But with ever-growing danger of law enforcement. You know, that's who we have to worry about. You know, that's the sad truth of it all. That's who we have to look out for. But it's hard thinking, you know, like, these are the people that are supposed to be protecting you, and they're attacking you for something that they should be believing in the first place, too. So whatever anybody can do, help us stop this pipeline. However, we don't have a laid out plan. I wish it did come with a book, How to Stop a Pipeline. I am going back to school, you know, this fighting with constitutional reform and then fighting this pipeline. You know, I'm excited I'm going to get that law degree. After all, I need it.
Right on. The legal profession needs folks like you. And I went to law school with Tanya Ganilia Frishnar, who was a fierce indigenous warrior legal activist, and it'll be great to see you join the ranks. And Simone, yourself, what's your message to us?
Well, I don't know if I can say it any better than Angel and Silas have already articulated. There's so many amazing people in this movement who are putting everything on the line to fight for what's right for everyone, for clean water and for life. So support Indigenous peoples. These are our homelands, and fight for them. The Indigenous Environmental Network, where I work, just co-authored a report titled Indigenous Resistance Against Carbon. So Line 3 is one of the many fights that Indigenous peoples are engaged in. We are learning through our research that Indigenous campaigns are resisting projects that are equal to at least one-fourth of U.S. and Canadian greenhouse gas pollution, and that we are in sort of holding back the equivalent of 400 coal-fired power plants. Line 3 itself would be the equivalent of 50 new coal-fired power plant emissions, which is more than the state of Minnesota emits all year anyway. I guess my addition to what has been expressed by Silas and Angel is to support Indigenous resistance. There are many ways that you can do that, and we've seen so many beautiful allies doing it, and we just encourage you to keep coming out. We see you. We love you. We appreciate the gifts that people bring of their whole selves. Many of those 900 people who were out here arrested are non-Indigenous allies or allies who are not even from our communities, but they recognize that we are in a global climate crisis.
Is there a website, et cetera, that we can keep in touch with? Is there a mayor to call? Is there a federal institution or personnel that should be called to say, stop the pipeline? The governor of the state, that we should also flood them with emails and letters and so on?
Governor Walz is the governor of Minnesota, who campaigned saying that he would not support a pipeline going through treaty land, but now is highly supportive of the pipeline, and we're incredibly disappointed in that, with that. So if you want to reach out to him.
Very, very
and
disappointed.
Then Jamie Pinkham and others with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And then President Biden. There's never been a federal environmental impact statement or study done. You know, this was a project that was pushed through by the Trump administration, and we had high hopes that the Biden administration would quash it, but instead they are continuing to support it, and it's never been correctly done. Things like Biden, President Biden, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz are the ones that come to mind. Can you think of others, Angel?
After I wrote a letter to the lieutenant governor and the governor, they told me to contact the senator, Tina Smith, and Amy Klobuchar. So there's another two.
Okay, so we've got Amy Klobuchar to add to the list. What about Enbridge? Who the hell is the CEO that we keep our disdain upon?
Like Silas said, Al Monaco. He's been the CEO since 2012.
We have a lot of different individuals and folks to make our feelings known. And just lastly, in terms of yourselves, what's the best way of touching base, keeping on top of what's happening there, hopefully giving some material support as well?
Indigenous Environmental Network, or IEN.org.
Honor the Earth, honorearth.org.
Great. Just want to thank all of you for what you do for all of us, and the respect and the love and the activism has to be returned. We've got to stop this pipeline for sure and support the treaty rights, support indigenous people, support yourselves by supporting the planet as well. That's what it's all about. I've been speaking with Simone Sinagles with the Indigenous Environmental Network, Angel Stevens, Anishinaabe wild rice harvester and member of the anti-pipeline Menominee camp, and Silas Neeland, 13-year-old Indigenous water protector. Now we'll hear from Indigenous activist Winona LaDuke right from the front lines.
This is a really sad day for Minnesota. For 5 years, we have tried to make Minnesota do the right make the right decision here. And this is a case where they could have done the right thing for all of us. There is no reason that they should have made that decision. We have tried everything. The fact that the Department of Commerce and the administrative law judge clearly said that this pipeline should not be granted a permit nor a certificate of need. And the fact that the Public Utilities Commission did something which is unprecedented, which is to rule against both of those decisions, is a mockery of a system. I'm someone that wants civil society to work in Minnesota. I, for 5 years, have come down to this commission. For 5 years, I've come here to protect my water, to protect my future generations, and to protect my rice. I have been joined by all of these people, and we have stood here. And we are standing on the right side of history. And we're going to continue to stand on the right side of history, because someone has to stand for the water. Someone has to stand for future generations. What they have done to us today is egregious. It is egregious what they have done not only to the Ojibwe people, but to the people of Minnesota. They have taken our Sandy Lake, which is the equivalent of the Wounded Knee Massacre of Minnesota, and said, we will lay pipe across it. And that is what we will do. And for 5 years, we have tried to make the system work, but Minnesota and Enbridge have asked us if this is going to be like Standing Rock, and they have gotten their Standing Rock. That is what they have done. The fact is that all of us will fight through every regulatory process that is available to us. We will do everything that is needed to stop this pipeline, and then we will stand. And so what I'm going to tell you is that what you know, is that we have asked people to come to Minnesota. You know, Minnesota has a welcome fisherman and welcome hunter signs throughout the north. And we have said it is time to welcome water protectors. So it is time to come to Minnesota to protect the water because we value it. And so we are saying that I'm inviting you to come now to begin to learn about our beautiful water, our Anishinaabe people, our wild rice, and to stand with us because we will all need it. As the time goes ahead, we will see how this will all work out. But what I tell you is that we are not backing down. We are here, we will stand here because we have been here for 10,000 years. We are the home team and we're not going anywhere. Miigwech, thank you.
That was Winona LaDuke, who has devoted her life to advocating for indigenous control of their homelands, natural resources, and cultural practices, and respect for treaty rights. This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.